Chapter 4 Relationships. Dash laughed. Jimmy said, "And then I asked, are the red bulbs more difficult to cultivate than the yellow?" Owen Greylock, Knight Captain of the Prince's Army of the West, said, "You came close to a personal insult, James." Jimmy smiled. "In that strange land, what I said was far more important than what I meant." He took another drink from his ale. "I might have found the girl attractive in different circumstances, but her contempt for me simply because I came from another land, it made any notion of romance impossible." Rue said, "Well, you didn't seem to have any problems with that young serving girl later that night." Jimmy smiled. "I thought you were asleep." Rue shook his head. "I was, but you woke me up. I decided it was less awkward to feign sleep. Besides, I've had friends coupling a few feet away before, in camp." He glanced at Eric. Kitty, who had been standing behind Rue, filling ale tankards, said, "Oh?" in a meaningful tone, then turned and walked away. Rue laughed, and so did the others, as Eric began to blush. "What's this, then?" asked Duncan Avery. "Something going on between you two?" Eric said, "Not that I'm aware of." He glanced at Kitty's retreating back. "I don't think so, anyway."
"Think so?" said Jado Sharty. "Man, there either is or there isn't. That's simple enough even for someone as dim as you, and that's the truth."
Eric stood up. "I guess. Excuse me." Jado laughed as Eric followed Kitty. The sergeant from the Vale of Dreams said,
"Man, if that boy was any dumber when it comes to women, we'd have to kill him to put him out of his misery."
Jimmy glanced at his brother, and Dash said, "I don't know. Kitty's a strange girl. I think she just likes having someone solid around." Rue said, "Eric's that." Eric reached the bar and said, "Kitty?"
"Yes, Sergeant Major?" she asked coolly.
He blushed again. She fixed him with an unwavering glance.
Spit it out before you choke."
"What did you mean at the table?"
"Mean?"
she asked, a sceptical expression on her face.
"By what?"
"By that... oh."
"Nothing. Just oh, as in oh."
Eric suddenly realized he was being made a fool of, and he felt his colour rising.
"You're making sport of me."
She reached across the bar and patted his cheek.
"It's so easy to do."
"What is this?"
he asked, losing any sense of humour in the situation.
"Are you mad at me?"
She sighed.
I'm just mad at men in general."
Eric said,
"Well, take it out on someone else."
Her eyes narrowed.
"You've suddenly got a tender side for a man who's killed dozens and bedded whores next to his friends."
Eric felt flustered. This girl's attitude was getting under his skin.
"What would you have of me?"
he asked in exasperation. Kitty studied his face a long, silent moment, then said in a low voice,
"I don't know."
Eric stared at her. The torchlight reflected off a faint sheen of moisture on her upper lip. She was perspiring lightly, despite the cool of the evening. After a moment, she asked,
"What do you want?"
Eric shook his head.
I don't know either, but I didn't like the way things felt when you..."
"Said oh,"
she finished for him. Said that way, it sounded so silly Eric had to laugh.
"Yes, I guess that's what I mean."
"Come with me," she said.
She gestured to one of the other girls that she was leaving, and led Eric through the kitchen, past the cook and his helpers, through a rear door into the courtyard behind the inn. For a moment, Eric experienced an odd sensation of familiarity. He had grown up in such a yard, with the stable and forge, well and hayloft, behind an inn. There was a wooden bench around the well, used by those too short to pull up the bucket easily, and Kitty went and sat on it, motioning for Eric to sit next to her. Eric said, "It's quiet back here." Kitty shrugged. "I never noticed. I'm usually too busy." Eric sat, and Kitty leaned over and kissed him. He held still an instant, then he returned her kiss. After a long moment, she sat back, looking at him. Finally, she said, "I've never done that before." "Kissed a man?" Eric said, his voice showing his surprise. "I'm a thief, not a whore," she said. "I've been raped and had men stick their tongues in my mouth, but I've never kissed anyone before." Eric's mouth hung open, and then he shut it. "What about Bobby?" he asked finally. She shrugged.
"What about him?"
"Well, I thought..." He hesitated. "Well, we just assumed you and he..." She looked down.
"I would have, if he'd asked. He was good to me. Better than I deserved, I think. I mean, he treated me roughly that night you caught me, and he threatened to hang me and the like, but mostly made me laugh. And he kept others from hurting me."
She pointed to the back of the inn. "I've got to watch for mockers or anyone else nosing around, but what I am now is just a barmaid. That's not bad, 'cause I won't whore." She looked down. "I would have lain down for Bobby because he was good to me. But he didn't love me, and I didn't love him. Not that way." She looked at Eric. "I don't think there was anyone he loved. Maybe except for Captain Kayliss. Bobby was devoted to him. I thought for a while he might be one of those men who love other men." She made a motion with her hand, as if flipping something over. "Not that I care. I'm no follower of Sung the Pure. But you do wonder. Then I heard he was a regular down at the White Wing, so I figure he'd just got it in his head to get his itch scratched by someone who's, She searched for a concept. "Not special to him," Eric supplied. "Yeah," she agreed. "That's it. Like if he did it with me or someone else who wasn't a whore, it might make things, you know, different."
Eric nodded that he understood. She sighed. "Bobby joked and made me laugh. At first I was scared of him, because he said he would kill me if I betrayed the prince or the duke, and I saw in his eyes he meant it. But after a while, when folks here treated me right, well, I stopped being afraid. I've got no place to go, so like it or not, this is my home."
She was silent a while, looking at the inn. "It's not a bad life. I know something big's coming. You can't work here and not figure out a few things. Soldiers who aren't bragging on what they're doing, they're keeping secrets. So something big's coming. I don't know what, and I think I don't want to know."
She paused and stared up at the pale moon. Suddenly she turned her head to face Eric. "But with Bobby gone, you're the man who's been nicest to me. The men sometimes say things to the other girls about me, but I don't mind. It's just, well, you've never been anything but nice to me."
Eric shrugged and said, "I know what it's like to have some tough luck, I guess. You can't know what life is like on the street."
He said nothing, just watching her in the flickering torchlight. She went on. "Girl children aren't thought much of, except for whores. There's good money for little girls in some places. She hugged herself. My mum was a whore, that's the truth. No one knows who my father was. My mum threw me out when I was 6. I think maybe she was keeping me from the crib. Her whore master kept looking at me funny. I got found by this man, named Daniels, and he took me to this place in the sewers. They gave me food and told me they'd take care of me, but I had to do what they said. There were other children there too. They didn't seem too bad off. They were dirty mostly, but they were fed. I begged and I learned the best dodges. I could cry like I was lost, and if some mark stopped to see what the problem was, someone else cut his purse. I started being the holder after a while. Older? Asked Eric. Cut purse. He gets spotted. He gets stopped by the city watch. He'd better have nothing on him that don't belong. So most mockers work in teams. The cut purse hands off the score as soon as he can, and the holder moves to the bagman, who takes it to Mother's. Mother's? That's what the mockers call the place we all live. Lived.
Oh.
She said, anyway, I saw me mum, and we talked after I'd been gone a few years. She told me I had a sister who was a whore. That was Betsy.
You found her then?
Yes, and we got along good. She didn't like me being a thief, and I didn't care much for her whoring, but we got along. I liked her. She was the only one I knew who wasn't always after me for something. When I got these, she pointed to her breasts. Some of the men got rough with me. If I could stay close to the other cut purses or hang out at Mother's, I was all right. But sometimes you just can't stay in a crowd. You know what I mean?
Eric didn't, but he nodded as if he did.
I got poked a lot until I started dressing like I was when you found me, like a boy, staying dirty. Not smelling good.
Eric didn't know what to say, so he remained silent.
What I'm saying is, I've never done nothing with a man that was 'cause I wanted.
Eric waited, and when she didn't speak, he softly asked,
Are you telling me you want to now?
Tears welled up in her eyes as she almost imperceptibly nodded. He sighed as he gathered her into his arms. Eric had never felt so unsure of himself before. He had been with whores since he had joined the army, and he remembered what the first one told him, to go easy. But every woman he had lain with knew more than he did. Now he was being asked to lie with a girl who knew only violence at the hands of men. He kissed her on the cheek, and then the chin, then the lips. At first she was very still, then after a few more kisses she began responding. Soon she stood and took him by the hand and led him into the barn, toward the loft where she slept.
Eric, came the familiar voice. You up there?
A sleepy, what's that? Came from Kitty as she nestled in his arms.
Their lovemaking had been tentative, slow, and awkward at first, then building, until Eric felt he was in the midst of battle, as Kitty exploded in a riot of emotions in his arms. Laughter mixed with tears was unleashed by his touch, and at the end she lay exhausted, as did he. A while later they made love a second time, and Kitty was much more sure of what it was she wanted. Eric had never experienced anything like this with another woman. He wondered if he was in love. He raised up on one arm as the caller again shouted his name.
Neko, I'm going to kill you,
Eric muttered as he sat up and began to dress. Kitty came awake.
Is that the funny gambler?
She asked. Eric said, He's not being very funny at the moment.
As he pulled on his boots, she slipped her arms around his waist and said,
"Thank you."
He stopped.
"For what?"
"For showing me what the other girls always talked about." Eric sat motionless for a moment.
"You're welcome, I think."
She leaned her head on his shoulder.
"You think?"
"It wasn't a favour," he said in a curt tone.
"Oh, you enjoyed it too?"
she asked innocently. Eric realised she was again teasing him. He was pleased it was too dark for her to see him blush.
"I ought to spank you for that," he muttered.
She kissed his shoulder.
"Some of the girls at the White Wing charge extra for that, I've been told."
A wave of uncertainty gripped Eric, as real as a sword thrust in his chest. He turned and gripped her by the arms, harder than he intended, and when he saw the look of panic in her eyes, he instantly released his hold.
"I'm sorry," he whispered, "but I can't stand it when you mock me."
She looked at his face as tears formed in his eyes, and suddenly she was crying. She laid her chin on his shoulder, cheek to cheek with him, as she whispered,
"I'm sorry too. I don't know how to be any other way."
"I'll never hurt you," he whispered.
"I know," she whispered back. "I'm all jumbled inside."
Then she pulled back and he saw she was smiling.
"And it's your fault, Eric von Darkmoor."
He kissed her. Soon a cough sounded, and Eric turned to see Nakor's head poking up from below as he stood on the ladder to the loft.
"There you are!"
Without a word, Eric extended his leg, pushing the ladder away from the loft, and watched it vanish, with a satisfying squawk from Nakor, into the gloom. A loud thud and an oof of breath exploding from Nakor's lungs followed. Kitty laughed, and Eric finished dressing. After a moment, as Nakor lay groaning dramatically from atop a pile of hay, Eric said,
"When you've done with your act, put the ladder back up."
The groaning was instantly replaced by a chuckle.
"You know me too well," said Nakor.
The ladder reappeared at the edge of the loft, and Eric glanced at Kitty, who was dressed. He went down the ladder first, and she followed. Nakor said,
"Sorry to have bothered you and your lady friend, but I needed to see you." "Why?"
asked Eric.
"To say goodbye, for a while."
Eric saw that Chopai, his one-time comrade in arms, and now Nakor's student, was standing silently by the doorway of the barn.
"Where are you going?" asked Eric. "Down to Stardock again. The king has asked me to return there while Lord Aruta returns to work for his father."
Then his expression turned serious.
"Something's going on. Prince Erland sailed into port tonight aboard a Keshian cutter."
Eric said,
"Nothing we can talk about."
Nakor nodded.
"I think I know what you mean."
Eric said,
"Well, have a safe journey and let me know when you return to the city."
Nakor nodded.
"We'll be back."
He motioned for Chopai to follow as he left the barn, and Eric watched them vanish into the night.
"That is the strangest little man," said Kitty.
"You're far from the first to observe that," said Eric. "Still, he's a good man and worth six when you're out on the trail. The things he knows are astonishing. He claims there's no magic, but if there's anyone who's a better magician out there, I've not met him."
Kitty came and leaned in to Eric, and he slipped his arm around her waist.
"What did he mean? Something's going on?"
Eric turned and kissed her.
"You catch spies, and you want me to talk about secrets?"
She nodded, resting her cheek against his chest.
"I sometimes think I know what's going on, Eric, as I piece together bits of things heard here and there. Other times I'm not even sure what I'm doing here. Since Bobby died, I often think I'm in one of those places the priests talk about, one of the lesser elves. I can't leave the inn unless I've a pair of guards with me. The Mockers have put the death mark on me, but they're the only family I've known."
Eric couldn't think of anything to say. He hugged her.
"If I get some time off soon, I'll take you somewhere. Someplace different, away from the city."
She clung to him a minute, then said,
"I have to get back."
He walked toward the rear door of the inn and removed his arm from around her waist when they got there. Saying nothing, he followed her inside. She silently moved through the kitchen and took her usual station behind the bar. Jadoshati and Owen Greylock still sat at the table, but Rue had departed.
"Where's Rue?"
Eric asked as he sat.
"When you didn't come back, he, Jimmy, and Dash left. Something about an important appointment," answered Greylock.
"Did Nakor find you?"
asked Jado innocently.
"Yes," answered Eric as he sat.
"Not at too awkward a moment, I hope,"
said Jado, his face splitting into a wide grin. Eric blushed and said,
"No."
"That's good," said Jado.
Then he exploded into a laugh so infectious, Greylock and Eric were forced to join in. Kitty approached with a fresh pitcher of ale.
"What's so funny?"
she asked. Her tone was one of potential injury, and her expression spoke volumes. If she was the butt of some joke told by Eric, some brag of conquest, no repair would ever be possible to the damage done. Adroitly, Greylock said,
"Nakor,"
and started to laugh again.
"Oh,"
said Kitty, as if that explained everything. She smiled at Eric, and he returned the smile. After she left, Jadow said,
"So there is something going on with you two?"
Eric nodded. "And it scares the hell out of me."
Greylock held up his fresh ale, as if in a toast.
"That's serious."
Jadow nodded sagely.
"Very serious, man. It can only be one thing."
"What?"
said Eric, a tone of worry in his voice.
"Oh, man, he does have it bad," said Jadow.
"That's the truth," answered Greylock.
"What?"
demanded Eric.
Greylock said, "Never been in love before."
Jadow retorted,
"He's too stupid to know if he has."
Eric sat back and said, "I guess not." His brow furrowed, and he stared into his ale as if he'd find an answer in it. Then suddenly he grinned and looked at the faces of his two friends.
"I guess not."
He turned to gaze at Kitty, who was busy cleaning behind the bar, talking quietly with another of the working girls, then turned back to his friends.
"I'm in love,"
he said, as if it were a revelation. Suddenly Greylock and Jadow couldn't contain themselves and started laughing again. After the mirth died, Jadow said,
"Come on, boy, you need another drink."
Greylock shook his head and sighed.
To be young again.
Eric just sat silently, wondering at all the odd feelings of delight and uncertainty within. He stole a glance at Kitty and saw her watching him. He smiled at her, and she returned it, and he felt joyous inside. Then, while Jadow and Greylock exchanged witty remarks, a dark cloud descended over Eric as he considered the coming battle. How could he afford the time for anything other than that, he wondered to himself. Sylvia bit Rue playfully on the neck.
"Oh!"
he said, half in jest, half in real pain.
"That was too hard."
She pouted.
"I need to punish you. You've been gone too long."
She snuggled down into the crook of his arm as he said,
"I know. The closer we get..."
He caught himself. He was about to say, to the invasion.
"Closer to what?"
she asked, very attentively. He studied her face in the candlelight. He had come to her house late, and they had gone straight to bed. Her father was away on business, she said, so he planned on spending the entire night, rather than returning to his townhouse before dawn, as was his habit when Jacob Estabrook was at home. Thinking about what he had found about her father's advantage over Rue's companies in trade with Great Kesh, he again wondered if he was saying anything that she was repeating to her father. He pushed aside the concern.
"I mean, as I get closer to this goal I have, controlling all shipping on the Bitter Sea, I seem to have less time for anything else."
She bit him on the shoulder again, this time hard enough to make him genuinely cry out.
"Explain that to your wife," she said, indicating the teeth marks she'd left.
She got out of bed, and Rue marvelled at the sight of her naked body. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever encountered, and, in the light of the single candle, she seemed sculpted from living marble, without flaw. He thought about his own wife's pudgy body, without a hint of strength in the muscle, the marks on her left by childbirth, and he found himself astonished by his ability to make love to Carly. As Sylvia put on her robe, he said,
"What's gotten into you?
You have time to spend with Helen Jacoby, but you spend days away from me."
Rue said, "You can't possibly be jealous of Helen."
"Why not?"
She turned, an accusatory expression on her face as he sat up in her bed.
"You spend time with her. She's not unattractive in a raw-boned peasant girl fashion. You've mentioned you respect her wit far too many times for my liking."
Rue got out of bed and said, "I killed her husband, Sylvia. I owe her some comfort, but I've never touched her."
"You'd like touching her, I wager," said Sylvia.
Rue tried to put his arms around her, but she brushed him aside and moved away.
"Sylvia, you're being unfair."
"I'm being unfair?"
she said, turning and allowing her robe to fall open. Rue found himself beginning to become aroused at the sight of her.
"You're the man with the wife, children, and reputation.
I was one of the most eligible daughters in the kingdom until I met you."
Pouting, she moved toward him, letting her breasts rub against his bare chest as she said,
"I'm the mistress. I'm the woman of no status. You can leave whenever you want."
Her hand began tracing small circles on his stomach. Rue's breath came hard as he said,
"I would never leave you, Sylvia."
Reaching down, she stroked him and said,
"I know."
He pulled off her robe and carried her so quickly to the bed he almost tossed her onto the covers. Quickly taking her, he pleaded his undying love, while Sylvia looked at the canopy overhead, fighting off a yawn. A self-satisfied smile then formed on her lips that had nothing to do with physical pleasure and everything to do with power. Rue was on his way to being the most important merchant in the history of the kingdom, and he was clearly under her power. She listened to Rue breathe more rapidly as his passion mounted, and she detached herself from the experience. The novelty of his lovemaking had long since worn off, and she preferred the talents of his cousin, Duncan, who was far more attractive and whose appetite for inventive love play matched her own. She knew Rue would be appalled to discover that she and Duncan often shared this bed, and occasionally invited one of the servants to participate as well. She knew that Duncan would be malleable as long as he had access to fine clothing, good food, rare wine, pretty women, and the trappings of prosperity. He would make a fine lover after she wed Rue, and a completely socially acceptable replacement for him one day. As Rue neared the pinnacle of his ardour, Sylvia absently wondered how long she need wait to wed the repellent little man, after she arranged the murder of his fat wife. At the thought of taking control of both her father's financial empire and ruse, Sylvia found her own passion mounting at last. And as Rue could control himself no longer, Sylvia joined him in a paroxysm of release, imagining herself as the most powerful woman in kingdom history. Eric knocked on the door, and William looked up.
"Yes, Sergeant Major."
"If you have a minute, sir," he asked. William waved him to a chair, and Eric sat.
"What is it?"
"Nothing to do with training," said Eric. "That's going well. It's a personal matter." William sat back. His expression was neutral. While serving together, each man had occasionally let the other glimpse some facet of his personal life, but neither had intentionally opened a conversation on a personal subject.
"I'm listening," said the Knight Marshal of Krondor.
"I know this girl, and, well, if you don't mind, I just need to talk about being a soldier and getting married." William said nothing for a moment, then he nodded.
"It's a difficult choice. Some handle family matters well, others don't." He paused. "The man who held this office before me, Gardan, was once a sergeant like yourself. He served Lord Boric, Duke of Cridy, when my father was a child there. He came to Krondor with Prince Aruta and rose to this office. All the while, he was married."
"How did he do with it?"
"Well, all things considered," said William, "he had some children, one of whom became a soldier like him. He died in the sacking of the far coast."
Remembering what his stepfather, Nathan, had told him of those days, Eric knew that many had died during those raids.
Gardan was already dead by then. Some of the other children survived, I believe.
William rose and closed the door behind Eric and came to sit on the edge of his desk. Eric noticed that apart from the formal tabard of his office, the Knight Marshal elected to wear a common soldier's uniform without markings of rank.
"Look, with what's coming," William began. He fought for words, then said, "Is any sort of relationship wise?"
"Wise or not, I have it," said Eric. "I've never felt this way before about a girl." William smiled, and for a moment Eric saw years drop from the man.
"I remember."
"If you don't mind my asking, have you ever been married, sir?"
"No,"
said William, and there was a hint of regret in his voice.
"My life never seemed to have room for a family."
He moved to his own chair and sat.
"Truth to tell, my family hasn't had much room for me."
"Your father?" asked Eric. William nodded.
"Time was we didn't speak to each other from anger. We've since gotten over that. But it's hard. If you'd ever met my father, you'd think he was my son. He looks but 10 years older than you."
William sighed.
"The ironic thing, it turns out, was that becoming a soldier, as I did, had been his own boyhood dream. He insisted I study magic."
William smiled.
"Can you imagine growing up somewhere where everyone practices magic, or is married to someone who does, or is the son or daughter of someone who does?"
Eric shook his head.
"It must run in your family, though. I met your sister."
William smiled ruefully.
"Another irony. Gamina's adopted into our family, and she's far more adept at things magical than I." I have one pitiful talent. I can speak with animals. They tend toward short, uninteresting conversations. Except Phantus, of course.
At mention of the Fire Drake, Eric said, I haven't seen him around the palace lately.
He comes and goes as it pleases him. And if I ask him where he's been, he pointedly ignores me.
Eric said, I still don't feel any closer to a decision than I did before.
William said, I know that feeling too.
There was a young magician from Stardock, a girl from the desert stock of the Jalpur, who came to study with my father when I was a boy. She was 2 years older than I. She was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Dark skin and eyes the colour of coffee. She moved like a dancer, and her laughter was musical. I was smitten the first time I saw her. She knew me as the master's son, Pug's boy, and she knew I was infatuated with her. I followed her around, making a pest of myself. She put up with me with good grace, but after a while, I think I wore her nerves thin.
William gazed out the window that overlooked the courtyard and said,
I think her indifference to my plight was one of the big reasons I chose to leave Stardock and come to Krondor.
He smiled in remembrance.
She came 2 years later.
Eric raised an eyebrow in question.
Prince Aruta's father had a magical adviser, a wonderful old character named Culgan. Far from the most powerful magician around, he may have been among the most intelligent. He was like a grandfather to me in many ways. His death hit my father very hard. Anyway, Prince Aruta decided he wanted a magical adviser in his court. So he asked Pug to send his best to Krondor. Father surprised everyone by sending her instead of one of the masters. I thought at first he was sending her to check up on me.
He smiled ruefully in memory. William was almost laughing as he went on.
You can imagine the consternation among the nobles when she showed up and turned out not only to be Keshian, but to be distantly related to one of the most powerful noble lords among the desert men of the Jalpur. It took Prince Aruta's iron will to force the court into accepting her.
William sighed.
Things got very difficult here the day she showed up. Some things I can't talk about. But suffice it to say, by the time we were done, she and I had learned we were very different people than we had been at Stardock. We also discovered that my feelings hadn't changed, and I was astonished to discover that the 2 years apart had changed the way she looked at me. We became lovers.
Eric said nothing for a moment, as William became lost in a moment of remembering.
We were together for 6 years.
What happened?
She died.
Eric said, If you don't want to talk about it...
I don't, interrupted William.
Eric looked uncomfortable.
Well, I'll go, sir. I didn't mean to open old wounds.
William waved away the apology before it came.
You didn't. Those wounds are with me every day, and they are always open. It's one of the reasons I've never wed.
As he reached the door, Eric said,
If you don't mind me asking, sir, what was her name?
Without looking at Eric, still staring out the window, William said,
Jezara.
Eric closed the door behind him. As he walked along the corridor leading to the marshalling yard, he considered the conversation. No closer to knowing what he should do, he decided to put his mind to the matters before him, and let his feelings for Kitty come as they might.